This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, May 16th, 2021. And today on the program, we will discuss AEW returning to touring in July, Arena Mexico reopening to fans, the latest in viewership, the crisis that is upon us with the shutdown, not shutdown permanently, but a temporary shutdown of Showbiz Daily. Nonetheless, we have viewership numbers, and we will talk about them. The talent management group for WWE was disbanded, apparently, last month, and Don Callis, his role at Anthem Sports and Entertainment, is in question. What might be next for him, if anything? All that and more on this program. But first, and now joining me, he has just woken up from his nap. I sent out an Amber Alert. One friend of the show, DJ Jarka, I was messaging him. Have you heard from Chris Gullo today? Is he alive? Did he pass out and die while doing yard work this morning or something? And he did not respond to me. I thought maybe Jarka was caught up in this too. Other people were not responding to my messages. I thought it was like there was like some nuclear war that I didn't know about that was affecting everyone except for me. But then finally, some hour after our scheduled recording time, I get a message from Gullo. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. He passed out from a nap. I was napping too. I had an alarm set though for my nap 15 minutes prior to recording time. I woke up from my nap. Chris Gullo did not. Welcome to the show. Welcome to reality, Chris Gullo.
Yeah, I totally, my mind blanked. I've been, this whole weekend has been, mulching and soiling and, you know, my vegetable garden and my edible landscape for my front yard.
Your edible landscape?
Yes. Yes.
Were you eating edibles before you fell asleep?
No. Our bushes, instead of like, you know, people have a standard lilac bush or whatever, we have berry bushes and strawberry plants in our bush area. And then we have cherry trees in front as well. So,
okay. I've been doing Python this week again, always. Showbiz Daily is down. It has been down since Wednesday. I was, you know, in one sector, let's call it, of WrestleNomics headquarters on Wednesday afternoon. And, I have a program that helps me read the Showbiz Daily, information, let's say. And I was waiting, this Showbiz Daily, for those who don't know, is the website that posts all the ratings for the entirety of cable and for broadcast prime time. And that posts usually at 4 p.m. Eastern. So I was, you know, as 4 p.m. Eastern approaches, I will press go on my little program and wait and wait and wait. And it's usually a few minutes after 4 p.m., the ratings pop up. But they did not pop up for AEW, which is what everybody wants to quote, tweet, and rant about, is the AEW ratings and have Twitter rage about. But no, they didn't appear. Nobody knew why. Usually when Showbiz Daily is going to have a delay because of a holiday or something, they put a little post out there that says there's going to be a delay and this is the schedule going forward. That did not happen this week. And it was not until, I think they did tweet. They're having some problems with their website. And if you go to showbizdaily.com right now, as of this recording, it says, under reconstruction, we'll be back as soon as possible. So, that notwithstanding, we did not let that stop us. We do not wholly rely on Showbiz Daily for our viewership information here. Thanks to some other folks in the world who have Nielsen data access, I was able to get PW Torch did report the AEW Dynamite number, which we'll talk about. But I was able to get independently, and now only patrons have, and we will discuss it here for the rest of the world, the viewership for Dark Side of the Ring on Thursday and Impact Wrestling. We do have an overnight number through TVSeriesFinale.com for SmackDown to discuss as well. But a crisis in my world, Showbiz Daily is down.
But you made the best of it.
I did. I had to.
How many people would have dug deep for that? Not many. They've probably just been like, hey, we'll have updated numbers for you next week.
Yes. It's been quite a week in the world of wrestling journalism. And I was able to get additional information independently of the usual public sources. But we'll discuss it.
Well, we'll get right into the news. AEW is returning to touring, live audience touring, and that's going to start in July. They have announced that July 7th they'll be returning to Miami, and then they'll be in Cedar Park, Texas, on July 14th, which is the Austin, Texas area, and then July 21st, Garland, Texas, which is right outside of Dallas. And they did reschedule a couple events, St. Louis to November 5th and New Orleans to January 12th. Not too surprised about this with everything going on with the vaccines and everything. Brandon, what are your thoughts? Do you think it's too soon?
I don't know. It's it is conspicuous, of course, right, that this is Florida and Texas, two of the states that are probably going to be among the least restrictive. I don't know. I was more judgmental in the earliest days of the pandemic about what was going on. I don't know. Especially by the time July rolls around, where you've given people sufficient time to get vaccinated, at least here in the United States, it's been quite prevalent. So, but it's interesting. I think what's most interesting from this, other than maybe safety issues, is that on November 5th, these are all Wednesdays, right? Except for November 5th, which is a Friday. The press release refers to, I think, all these dates as Dynamite tapings, except for November 5th, which is referred to as a TNT taping. The Observer reported that there's going to be some tapings done in conjunction with the pay-per-view weekend, so presumably that would be a pay-per-view weekend, which does line up with their past pay-per-view schedule when happening in November. Not information on my part, only speculation on my part, that I think we know that we're going to see another 1 hour program on TNT from AEW. That's part of the current deal with Warner Media. Tony Khan has said as much publicly in media conference calls or other interviews. So we know there's another 1 hour program coming up. That's been, people have been talking about that and expecting that for really the duration of this renewed deal that AEW has been under since January 2020, just before the pandemic. Still haven't seen that first, that 1 hour program appear. I would expect to see it by November 5th, if not before, maybe even as soon as the NBA playoffs are out of the way. I would expect it to be a Friday program that is live, maybe at 10 p.m. Again, these are just predictions and speculations, but 10 p.m. Friday after SmackDown is over with. That's what I would expect. And if you think about what they're doing already as far as the sheer volume of content that AEW is managing to put out through Dark and Dark Elevation, they're going to need some sort of other taping day, I guess. I suppose they could still continue to do tapings in Daily's place if they wanted to, which would probably be at a lower cost. But yeah, that's what I would expect, that there's a 1 hour TV show that's launched out of a Friday taping. Maybe it's in conjunction with pay-per-view weekends only. I don't know. I would expect to see it used for this Friday show or for this additional 1 hour show and for Dark and Dark Elevation.
One thing about that Friday date is, I know it says TNT team, but it could be a live show. Traditionally around that time period, usually it's late October, but it could be early November, is the beginning of the NBA season. So if they got a doubleheader on Wednesday night on TNT and they're probably like, oh, maybe we'll just go live on Friday night. That might be opening night for the NBA.
Right. And TNT is probably going to be doing NHL games too by that time. So yeah. I have no idea how this is going to sort out as far as TNT is going to have basketball, hockey, or wrestling on every night of the week, I would think, just about. But we'll see.
Where's the drama shows? They're supposed to be about the drama.
What about Snowpiercer? What about all the reruns of Ridley Scott films and things of that nature? Oh, yeah.
All right. So moving on to our next topic as we continue this you know, reopening and live crowds in front of fans. Arena Mexico is reopening to fans. This is from the Cubs fan reporting on Monday. Mexico City will allow buildings like Arena Mexico to open up for events on May 17th. The CML decided to start running on the very first Friday after May 21st. They're going to be limited to 500 tickets based on the same government regulations, but they're clearly in a hurry to put fans in seats and not wait for the already announced May 28th show. And then I believe I saw that those 500 tickets are already sold out.
Are they?
I believe checking on Twitter about it. So, yeah, I know that Mexico has had a rough go of it with COVID outbreaks and all that. And they don't have the capability to have the vaccine as much as we do. But, you know, it's also more of a, I don't want to say the word lawless, but it's, I'm surprised they haven't done live crowds sooner than this, to be honest with you.
Yeah. When I was following the COVID information in the past, you know, Mexico was doing even worse than the United States. But I don't have a lot to add to it. I just wanted to mention that and put that in the list of things to talk about to just so we're aware of what CML is doing, what's happening with Arena Mexico. But yeah, that's something we will watch in the future as events seem to be rolling back here. I know Fightful had a report that WWE is going to is looking at doing SummerSlam in front of a live crowd, maybe in Las Vegas. I have also heard that. Separately, I know stuff too. See, so yeah, I would expect SummerSlam to be in front of a live crowd and not at the Thunderdome. So there's that.
And that South Florida basketball team has eventually got to play basketball, so they would have in reality up until September for that stadium.
Is that right? And so there's a basketball team that plays. They're at the Sundome.
Yes,
right now. Are we talking about college football, college Bulls. Basketball or?
Yeah, USF Bulls.
Okay. That's NCAA.
Yeah, South Florida, but based in Tampa. It's okay. Kind of weird.
You were using the South Florida basketball team like people talk about the Washington football team. I thought maybe there was a renaming happening.
No, they're just the Bulls. They're yellow and green. And okay. You know. But yeah, so I would imagine they're already probably, if we don't see them live crowds by August, I think September, October. WWE be back to live crowds. Mm-hmm. Just my guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, all right. So we'll move on to the viewership about the people watching from home now. And Brandon, you have put together this nice spreadsheet for me to go over the ratings results. So yes. I thank you for that.
This is, you've heard of the Mueller report. This is the Gullo report. This is a table. This is actually in the WrestleNomics viewers spreadsheet for patrons. Maybe we should call them subscribers. But yes, this is a tab in there, but this is made especially for Chris Gullo.
All right, so we'll get right into it. We have final numbers from the May 7th Friday Night SmackDown, and we had a 2,282,000 overall viewers with a 0.65 and 1849, and both of those numbers were up from the week before for SmackDown. And I believe that was the week, I imagine it was the week after the Daniel Bryan match.
That's throwback SmackDown.
Yes, that's right.
That's block logo WWE SmackDown. Pulling in the big rating.
A lot of 80s, early 90s references.
Yeah.
IcoPro, because I remember watching IcoPro commercials in SmackDown, let me tell you.
Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan, not so much. But you put on block logo SmackDown for the masses, and that's what draws. That's what brings people in. No, it's 2.2 million viewers for that episode. The week before only had 2.0, about 2 million flat. So that's a delta. That's just a difference. Delta is a fancy way of saying difference in the math world. That is a difference of, what was it here? A 33% increase in 18 to 49, a 13% increase in total viewership from the week prior. But a very good rating for SmackDown. This week, we might as well talk about SmackDown overnights.
Yeah, the overnight number.
That we have. Again, not relying on Showbuzz Daily. Showbuzz Daily is down and under reconstruction. They are repopulating the site. I'm trying not to have a panic attack. but 1.8 million viewers is the overnight report. This is all from Nielsen ultimately, but from another website called TV Series Finale, which is mostly concerned with scripted programming and whether or not scripted TV shows are going to be renewed or canceled, but they do report overnight ratings. So we have that. It looks to have done. Now the overnight rating, I should mention off the top here, is usually ends up being lower, at least in recent times, usually ends up being substantially lower by about 100,000. As somebody said, even 150,000 ends up being lower. We'll get the final on Monday, hopefully when Showbiz Daily's back up. And so let's say it ends up being 100,000 higher than 1.8 million, still 1.9 million. And out of 36 consecutive weeks, SmackDown has done more than 2 million viewers, with the exception of one time in February. They did 1.9 million viewers. So this could be the lowest SmackDown viewership in quite some time. We'll see. Maybe even the lowest in the Thunderdome era. Now, you would expect viewership to be down in May. Viewership for Raw and SmackDown is always down in May for a variety of reasons, which you can imagine, including we're in the no longer in the WrestleMania season, even though WrestleMania Backlash is happening. What's the pay-per-view after that? WrestleMania Money in the Bank?
Sorry for WrestleMania Hell in the Cell.
I can't wait. And we did have WrestleMania SmackDown in April too, so I mean, how can you fall at in any event? Now I would expect viewership to be down. I think we discussed this, or at least I've discussed this on Twitter, that you should expect SmackDown viewership to be down in May. We'll see how far it goes, though. But that's interesting to think about. And I think it's a worthy, if cynical, thought to think about. Well, you just did this nostalgia episode, and you followed it up with not a great number. But that's about as much as I really want to dig into that.
Well, we'll continue with live WWE programming, and we'll discuss Raw for May 10th. Pretty much very similar numbers to the week before, doing a 1.17, 1,807,000 viewers with a 0.53, and they did a 0.53 in the 1849 the week before too, and like there's a difference like 60,000 overall viewers, so yes. Not much of a difference for Raw.
When I started doing this,
we see that dip this week.
When I started doing this program solo, which I did for 1 year consecutively, from the beginning of the pandemic to the anniversary of the pandemic, one of the biggest challenges that I encountered during that time was reading large numbers. A huge challenge. Yeah, I've resorted to saying things like 1.8 million. That'll be easy. And
that's where I wanted to go. But I was like, I'll say the whole number, but I think that's where I'll go.
Yeah. So basically, what you just said there is that there's basically no difference in this week's Raw compared to last week's Raw. And by the way, all of this information is brought to you by the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet, which you can get access to for just $5 a month, along with a lot of other locked content at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. If we look at the WrestleNomics viewership report, which is something I'm probably going to put out weekly from here out, and I do this formula that basically asks, how out of the norm was this week's viewership compared to the last four? And in the case of Raw, this was, as I load the appropriate tab and click on it, and here we go, this was very, very slightly below normal for Raw under that formulation. So I consider this to be, I'm always like, I don't know, everybody wants to hyper-analyze and micro-analyze the number, and I think it's much more wise to just say, okay, let's not analyze this too deeply. And so I think, yeah, it's basically almost no difference, slightly below. Unless you put on some massive match here, I read nothing into this. Raw, if it's holding up, that's great, that's fine. They're doing fine, I think. Raw, again, most of these shows, in fact, really all of them, if you compare them to the wider trends of cable, which we calculate through Showbiz Daily in the top 50 daily cable programs, cable originals, everybody's performing better than cable in general, which has not always been the case. In 2019, that was not the case. In 2020, that was not the case. Raw was, at least Raw for one, was having attrition that was worse than cable overall. But everybody's holding up quite well, if not even better than quite well. And this is a fine number.
We'll move on to NXT as far as live WWE programming. And a little bit of a dip for them, 0.17, 18 to 49 with the 697 overall. So those numbers are down for the week before. And this is starting to become around the number they were when they were going head to head with Dynamite every week.
Yes.
So that's an interesting thing to see.
So this I am willing to analyze and ascribe some meaning to. Yeah, this is it's sort of telling us where NXT is going to end up living normally while they're here in this Tuesday time slot, where they're no longer opposed head to head with AEW, which was a more highly viewed program, as you said, just short of 700,000 viewers overall, which is down from the prior week, 1.7 in the key demo. And as you said, Cole, this is not that far off from what they were doing when they were running head to head with AEW. So that's got to be a disappointment to some degree. Maybe this is a one-off. Maybe this will get ironed out in the weeks to come. I would not expect that, though. I think this is where they're going to live. Now, I think people will want to know, you know, well, was there, with the Wednesday Night Wars, was that actually encouraging their viewership? Because people were so hyped up about the Wednesday Night Wars and these two shows going head-to-head. Did some people check out NXT that wouldn't have otherwise because of that? You can probably tell from my tone, I guess I'm skeptical of that, but I don't know, maybe. Maybe. But maybe it's the content. Maybe it's just... Yeah, we usually don't talk about creative that much, and I don't really want to, but I think it's become clearer to me over the last, I don't know, year or two. You know, I think it's like Bill Watts who said this once, that, you know, every booker after about 5 years, they hit a wall. They just hit a wall. Everybody does. And I think Triple H has hit a wall on NXT in that, you know, when you write, you know, you have to write the same product, and not literally the same product, but like, I mean, we have to write a show for this job, which is NXT, over and over again for 5 years. You may have a really great 3 years, but eventually it becomes challenging, and it would behoove you in some ways to have a fresh set of ideas from a different person. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen. This is where Triple H has to live. He has to live in this NXT universe where he's the head of creative, and he's not going to step aside for somebody else. So, but I think that's what's happening. I think the creative vision and direction of this product has hit a wall. It's not all Triple H's fault, but you know, I think you get creatively exhausted within a certain setting after a while. And I think it's, if only there was some, you know, way in an ideal world to get everybody to shuffle around and have different bookers, you know, go over here, like let Gato book NXT for a while. And let's not have Triple H book New Japan, but you know what I'm saying here. I think it's hard to book the same brand for like 5 years or more in a row.
And I mean, it just goes to NXT's all bit about can't miss matches. And really, you just have those to take over now. You know, it's not like, oh, I have to tune into NXT this week because, you know, Gargano, it is going to go one-on-one with, you know, whoever, and this is going to be awesome. No, you know, they're going to lead up to a takeover, and that's and WWE does such a great job with their packages that a lot of times you don't even have to watch the TV leading up.
Yeah, and I think there's two things when it comes to NXT, is that in the emerging days of NXT, when NXT became the valuable brand that it's become, when it was starting to become that, there was talent who are now on the main roster, and new talent cycled in who was also exciting. But those are mostly the people who are there now. So I think just my point is the people who are there now have been there for a long time. There isn't really a fresh recycling of stars coming through. These are sort of the NXT people now, whether that's whatever, Adam Cole and Gargano and Ciampa, et cetera. And I think what made NXT revolutionary in some sense has been worn out. These epic, awesome matches have sort of become cliche. Not taking anything away from the fact that it takes tremendous skill and talent to execute them. But I think these epics have become sort of manufactured and overdone. So I think there's that too. So that's these great matches are no longer feel as genuine, or at least not as novel and fresh.
Yeah, it's not the same NXT with Nakamura versus Joe with Mauro Ranallo announcing. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, or before that, and you know, the Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens and Finn Balor's back. But anyway,
yeah. Talking about just other WWE programming, Biography and Most Wanted, they were both Booker T themed this past weekend on Sunday, May 9th. Biography did 595,000 overall. Most Wanted did 555,000 and a 0.24 for Biography and a 0.22 for Most Wanted 18 to 49. That Most Wanted number was very similar to the week before, where there was a little bit of a drop for the Booker T Biography compared to the Randy Savage Biography.
Yes. Shawn Michaels coming up tonight, I think.
Yes.
So this was the lowest Biography yet. We'll see if this is where the rest of these live. That would be my expectation, is that most of them are going to either be slightly lower or somewhere around this number. We'll see. Yeah. Not a lot to reach.
Tonight is WWE Backlash or WrestleMania Backlash in too. So you're,
is it going to be going head up against, oh, I didn't think of that.
Yeah. I always forget when these events are. It's like, oh wait, there's a pay-per-view tonight. If you can still call them pay-per-views. Let's see here.
It's definitely still happening. Yeah. They're going to run this Biography against the pay-per-view.
Yes.
Which doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's tonight. Yeah. Yeah. So, but I mean, A&E's just got there. I mean, A&E's thinking they're going to get the classic fans for it. And then the normal WWE fans would be watching.
If this Biography tonight and this episode of WWE Most Wanted Treasures tonight does a number that's similar to this week, that will be interesting to tell you that there's a non-current audience. There's a totally different audience. That would be interesting to check out.
It might be. I don't know what Most Wanted is as far as if it's also Shawn Michaels, or, but it's always like an old school legend and something like that. So, yeah, that would be really interesting.
But it's not as if this is doing an incredibly old audience. This is doing this week did the Booker T documentary, did a 0.22 in the demo. That's higher than NXT, by the way, which is something I want to continue to point out, to just put in perspective. These Biographies, not in terms of total viewership. So it's like it's a younger audience. In fact, you would think these Biographies, which are essentially nostalgia pieces about stars who are no longer actively wrestling, that older fans would be checking this out. But this is doing a better 1849 viewership than NXT is. While NXT has a bigger audience overall, which almost certainly means we don't have all the numbers because we don't get the 17 and under viewership numbers, but which almost definitely means, I mean, I guess we do for the P50 plus. I'm not going to look it up while we talk right now, but point is, NXT has a larger older audience than the Biography this week, or last week for that matter.
All right. And then another WWE related program, Miz and Mrs., which had a great week, Brandon. They increased nicely in the ratings, 784,000 overall viewers at a 0.27, 18 to 49. And that was 5 points higher than the 18 to 49 the week before. And they were just a little under 700,000 the week before as well. So Miz and Mrs. having pretty much the most successful week in wrestling ratings.
Miz and Maryse are a draw. Clearly, this is proving that. This is validating Vince McMahon's decision to put the WWE heavyweight title championship, on the Miz, right? Obviously, Miz and Mrs. has the lead in from Raw, but this was the highest rating for Miz and Mrs. since 2019. I tweeted it, something like that, in years. The highest, the most viewed episode. So think about programming especially stuff that's not, well, even sports, they're all down year over year, right? And to some degree, you expect that because that's the nature of this media environment where people are spending more of their time doing other things, including streaming. Not Miz and Mrs., though. Miz and Mrs. is up year over year. I did leave the TV on. I caught like the end of Raw, left the TV on. I had it on mute, though. Had it all on mute because you can't. Anyway, and I don't know. Like Miz's dad was on, I saw. He was doing stuff. Remember Miz's dad from...
He's ratings.
What did he do at WrestleMania that one year? He put his fists up and got in the ring and tried to
fight. Yeah, he put his fists up. I forget who it was.
Was it Shane?
It was probably. I can't remember. His dad's an interesting looking guy.
Yes, absolutely. So that point is, it's something that I haven't talked about enough over the years is that look at these reality programs. They're doing better than NXT. Look at the biography and WWE Most Wanted Treasures. Everybody talks about NXT and it is not doing as well as AEW. We can't say that, but this is decisively doing better numbers than NXT.
And it's not like you had a bigger Raw audience to bleed in. Like it was the same Raw audience the week before.
Right. Raw was basically no difference. Down 3% in total viewership, up 1% in 18 to 49. But Miz and Mrs. up 13% in total audience, up 23% in 18 to 49. So Miz is a draw. Everybody always wants to at me on Twitter and get me to settle the argument about who's a draw. The Miz is a draw.
All right. Well, we'll move on to AEW Dynamite. And then this week was also, I know we've been talking about the live effect and a non-live effect. So this week was live due to when they had the double cage for the week before.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy slab packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun. And sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs. And it ends up being, you know, almost nothing. You know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7 so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
They only did not do their standard two TV tapings.
But the Blood and Guts match was live.
They did another live this week.
But the Blood and Guts match
was, yes. And then so was this.
Yes.
Yes. And so was this event as well, as far as it being live. But with it being live and everything, it did 936,000 with a 0.31, 1849. A little bit of a dip from Blood and Guts. It did a little under 1.1 with his 0.42 and 18-49. And I mean, this show, I mean, it didn't have Blood and Guts, but
it had blood. It had a lot of blood.
TNT championship. Yeah. You had a TNT championship. You had Moxley Nagata, like
Yuji Nagata.
Intriguing things there. So
you had
to see this dip.
Yes. You had SCU with their tag team on the line. This was not as low as that 1 week where they were going against the draft where they did under 900,000 viewers. But I think this is starting to give you an idea of where AEW is going to land in terms of a normal rating. This is again, and then in the neighborhood of what they were doing, maybe in March, and there were some not great times for AEW viewership in January and February, but, we'll see where they live. What else was I going to say? Oh, a lot of blood on this program. And I had a listener email me after our last episode where we were talking about Blood and Guts and so forth and things of that nature. I can't imagine TNT is going to stand for it, according to Vince McMahon in 2019 when he was indirectly criticizing AEW for its, up to that point, apparently violent product. But someone who's a listener who has worked in the advertising industry emailed me just to sort of say that, you know, a lot of these brands that buy advertising, they have certain guidelines about what kind of programming they'll be put next to, and that if they end up put next to something with graphic violence, that can be a big problem, or they can, I might be butchering what this person was telling me, but they can, you know, get a refund on the fee that they paid or something to that effect. So basically this person was making the argument to me that this could actually not be good for AEW and for TNT, because it could limit the variety of advertisers that want to advertise with them. I believe Walmart will not do advertising during any wrestling programming, despite the fact that they will carry wrestling action figures on their shelves, but they will not advertise during wrestling programming.
Yeah, and if you go to a Walmart and go to a independent wrestling show in a lot of small towns in America, the audience of a wrestling show and the people that are shopping in Walmart, pretty much the same group of people. So that's a shock.
Are you Walmart shaming on this program? We're never going to get Walmart to advertise in this podcast now, Gullo.
That's right, Walmart shame, but there is the people of Walmart.com. You can go to that website.
Yeah. Here, why don't There's I...
Some interesting people.
I'll read part of this person's email. I won't mention this person's name because he did not give me permission to do that. But the overwhelming majority of clients I've bought for explicitly direct us not to buy programs with graphic violence, as well as a few other things they don't like. Many actually have a formal advertising code of conduct that lays out this direction in great detail. Repeated offenses could be a firing offense for your ad buying company. For this reason, I can't imagine Turner, their sales department, is happy about the show despite the great numbers. It makes it much harder to sell. I've seen this before. Shows that do really well, but nobody wants to buy, they don't tend to last that long. AEW really needs to think hard about this. So there's a thought from one of our many intelligent listeners.
Yeah, I mean, that is true, but we've talked about it before. How many like shows can you watch, like CSI and stuff like that, where there's blood? And advertisers are run into those shows. So I get the context of why there's blood, but in 2021, I just don't know if that is as big as a concern as it was. So let's say 20 years ago when WCW was dropped by TNT and sold.
Speaking of violent things.
So I'm assuming you want to talk about Dark Side of the Ring. Yes. Dark Side of the Ring with its Nick Gage episode did 163,000 overall with a 0.07 18-49, down from last week with the Brian Pillman 2-hour premiere that did 272,000 and a 0.09.
Numbers, by the way, that you only hear on WrestleNomics.
I know there's a lot of criticism, you know, about deathmatch wrestling, and they're not going to get into that. But I enjoyed the episode, and I thought it would maybe even have more of an interest based on how Twitter was that day. I mean, my whole feed was MDK day with Nick Gage memories and pictures and all that. I mean, not a bad rating for Vice, obviously. So, I mean, that's good. But
this was one of the lower
people expected to perform.
This one was one of the more,
yeah,
more least viewed. One of the most least viewed. Is that a word? Is that a way to say that? This was not among the highest rated. This is among the bottom of episodes that have aired on Dark Side of the Ring. But it was still better than a few of them. Better than the Randy Savage episode from previous seasons. But yeah. Have you been on a show with Nick Gage?
Yes. I've been on two shows with Nick Gage.
Okay.
Great guy. Yes. I very great guy.
Yes. I you know, before I was ever on a show with him, I was like, oh, man. Oh, this guy. Is going to be like intimidating and scary, and we get there and he's like the most locker room leader, encouraging, positive. He's always saying positive stuff to people. He's watching the matches, you know, telling people they did an awesome job after they come through the curtain. He is just the man. He's somebody you want to have in your locker room.
Listen, at the end of the last tid of the season, we're sitting there, the show's finally over, I'm in the back trying to change to get out to do ring crew, and I'm sitting down and he hands me a beer and goes, great job, man. I'm like, all right, well, I'm gonna sit and drink this beer before I rush off the ring crew because it's Nick Gage.
yeah so this one was substantially down from last week. Last week was the season premiere with Brian Pillman But yeah, this was down 40% in total audience, down 22% in P18 to 49. But I think the interesting story here is that this is going head to head with Impact Wrestling. Do you want to read the Impact Wrestling row?
Sure. Yeah. So Impact Wrestling last week, well, Thursday, May 13th, did it 112,000 with a 0.03 of the 18 to 49, which is a little bit down for the week before, where it did a 0.04 with 120,000 overall. So Dark Side of the Ring wins the battle again with Nick Gage as the topic over Impact Wrestling.
Yeah. And I would be surprised going forward if Impact is ahead of Dark Side at any point here, unless Dark Side really starts to slide from here. So, but this is, it's hard to make an argument and try to imagine a scenario where this is not affecting Impact's viewership. They were doing in the upper half of the 100,000 range in weeks before Dark Side came back, to air, with new episodes. So they're only overlapping by 1 hour. It's only the second hour of Impact that's going head to head. And it's only the Dark Side was just 1 hour this week, right?
Yes. And it's be 1 hour going forward. And at 10 o'clock is now Dark Side of Football, which not the same. Okay. Just not the same.
Okay.
I mean, the Husney and Iser have nothing to do with it, too. Okay. So
those are the producers of Dark Side. Yeah.
Dark Side. But yeah, just not the same.
Okay. But yeah, I would expect the Dark Side to win that hour that they do run going forward. And it's pretty clearly affecting Impact Wrestling's viewership. But and this is with Kenny Omega now, who's the Impact Wrestling champion. There was just a pay-per-view last night. He's still the champion. I don't know if he's defending it, in fact, but he's going.
It was a six-man tag.
Thank you. He's going to have a match with Moose, so it looks like they'll probably be on for episodes going forward to promote that. That's coming up in June. Why don't we talk about Impact Wrestling now? And we'll go get to the WWE, the additional WWE topic that we have after that.
Yeah. Real quick, just a side note, I want to talk about Dark Side of the Ring. This week's the North Korea episode, the collision in North Korea, which I'm really excited about. The Friendship Festival, and they interviewed Inoki.
Wow.
So I'm really, really, really excited about this one. If there ever was one, I'm excited. It's about that.
How did they interview Inoki? Did they go to Japan? No, they couldn't have gone to Japan in the pandemic, right?
I don't know how they did
Was Inoki in the U.S.? Because Inoki's in bad health, last I saw.
They got Inoki. Wow. So they'll be interesting to see. But yeah, we will move on to more Impact news. And you sent me something over the weekend where, glancing through on the EVPs of Anthem Sports, Don Callis is no longer listed. Mm-hmm. Scott DeMore and Ed Norholm are the only Impact Wrestling related people listed on the EVPs for Anthem Sports. Very interesting. Now, they have been doing a kind of a storyline thing where DeMore is like, hey, you're supposed to be running this with me and you're out with Omega and, you know, they're going to strip you of your powers and all that. So they have been doing that. But in reality, is it real? Is Don Callis' role been reduced and he's just an on-air talent?
So Fightful has a report that just came out today, which is on their Patreon. So I won't read from it. If you're a Fightful subscriber, you can check that out. But the gist of it, and it's along the lines of things that I've heard too, is that his role has been Don Callis' role has been reduced. I didn't see it with my own eyes whether he was actually previously on that list of executives for Anthem. And by the way, if you've ever been an indie wrestler, you know when your picture is no longer on the roster page, that is cause for drama. Have you experienced this, Cullo?
I have not.
Maybe this was more of a thing back in earlier days of indie wrestling when, I don't know, it's like, you know, am I still getting booked by this promotion? You know, and you'd be like, fuck, I'm no longer on the they took me off the roster page.
You go to the alumni page.
I'm on the alumni page.
Did this really cause a scene back in the day? Did people get mad about stuff like this?
Oh, back in the day. When, so we are both closely aligned and associated with a promotion called Empire State Wrestling, which runs in the Buffalo, Niagara area. In the early days of Empire State Wrestling, we're talking the middle and early 2000s. The webmaster of the Empire State Wrestling website, who was me. I don't remember the specific examples of the circumstances, but there would be, you know, if I took somebody off, I was like, wait, we haven't booked him in like a year. And if this person was taken off of the roster, holy shit. Because they would check that. They would check that shit to see where they stood in life. And, you know, it was like a passive aggressive thing. You know, they took, you know. But yeah, I still hear people reference that from time to time. Yeah, they took me off the roster page. You know, anyway.
Or I'm not on the flyer. That's the current one. I'm not on the flyer.
Yeah.
Where's my match graphic?
Right. Anyway. Don Callis, supposedly there are people who are, this is ridiculous to talk about, I feel, but there are people who are eyeball witnesses that have said that his photo and his bio used to be there. Scott D'Amore is there. Can we talk about this for a moment? I listened to other wrestling podcasts. It's not Scott D'Amore, right? It's Scott D'Amore.
Scott D'Amore. That's how it's always been. That's how they pronounced it when he was managing TNA, Team Canada.
Okay. I listen to a number of podcasts, which are otherwise excellent, but say Scott D'Amore. Scott D'Amore. Anyway, he's still listed as an executive vice president of Impact Wrestling Exhibitions. Don Callis is nowhere to be found there. Supposedly he was there previously. I've heard that Don Callis' role has been reduced from whatever it was previously. And maybe he's still producing segments and involved in creative to some extent, but that his role has been reduced in Impact. So let's just talk hypothetically here. What do you think Don Callis' next move would be if he was leaving Impact Wrestling?
He would be in a position at AEW.
Oh, okay.
Maybe assistant talent relations or whatever it may be. I would think that the natural thing would be he would be in power of AEW.
Mm-hmm. I would be surprised in, I don't know, 8 to 12 months from now if that is not the case.
We'll have to definitely keep an eye on that. Speaking of talent and talent management, the 5 week long that's all it lasted was department that WWE started to manage talent's third party bookings and create maybe their own third party booking streaming has already been disbanded, Brandon. And this was in retaliation to they saw, you know, talent was doing cameos and Twitch and all this, and they really wanted to. They're cutting it. They want to control the narrative of it. It seems.
I want that money. God damn.
Yeah.
Can't I make money on their own? I want some.
And it's interesting that this coincides with Zelina Vega's been at the Performance Center. The reports.
Yes.
So I think they finally gave up on that. It seems like by disbanding the department, and they're just gonna. We'll see if talent will be more frequently back on Twitch and Cameo.
Let's be transparent about what came to light here. So the person who was hired to be the senior vice president of talent of the talent management group posted publicly on LinkedIn that she was looking for new opportunities in a very positive way. You go and look at her profile and look at her work history, and under WWE, her tenure was for 1 month from March to April. Where it says, I was hired by WWE to build and lead a new talent management division focused on strategic brand building and monetizing IP for 300-plus WWE superstars. Unexpectedly, the company made a decision to change course and disbanded the new team after just 5 weeks. As you were saying, Gull, it looks like this was something that was created in line with the vision that Nick Khan is bringing to this company that we can... I'm a talent agent who's had tremendous success. I've been hired into this new position, president and chief revenue officer, and we're going to take some of these experiences and skills that I have and sort of apply it to WWE. I'm a tremendously valuable IP. We've got all these wrestlers who are very popular. Huh. So let's get everybody the hell off Twitch though and Cameo so we can you know and legally all the contracts seem to jive with that. That'll work. So let's get everybody off of those platforms, and then we can sell this ourselves to Twitch or Cameo or to whoever else, or to do whatever it may be to sell the individual wrestlers, like we are. WWE is a talent agency. We have our own talent agency department for our wrestlers. And I can only guess that the opportunity to monetize WWE talent like a talent agency wasn't as great as they thought, or it's something that Vince authorized and decided, no, I don't want to do it anymore for whatever reason. It seems like when new management comes into WWE, that there's sometimes an over application of the skills and the strategy, the background of where that management came from. And this is maybe, I mean, who knows what the details are on this, but maybe this is an example of how that is being true for the Nick Khan regime. I asked somebody who's not in the wrestling business about this, and but who is in an adjacent, let's call it, business. And this person said, this is why I would never put my family and my livelihood into the hands of Vince McMahon. Just the whimsical decisions, I guess, that Vince is prone to make. So, but as you said, is it interesting? Is it coincidental? Maybe it's just a pure coincidence that Zelina Vega just happens to be back. And, the story with Zelina Vega is that she was very active, I think, with Twitch. I think she even had an OnlyFans account. And yes. This was not okay with WWE's new policy that you can't be dealing with third party platforms anymore. And she just, I don't know if she was fired, I don't know what the deal was, but she parted ways from WWE as a result. But she's reportedly, and according to Fightful, she was back at the Performance Center for some reason this past week. I did sort of put out a crowdsourcing question on Twitter. Has WWE appeared to soften its policy? Are people back on Twitch or Cameo to a greater degree than they were since that policy was reported? And nobody could tell me a strong yes. So I don't know.
There was some WWE talent on there on Cameo around WrestleMania weekend, but it looked like it was WWE driven. Mm-hmm. Like it was, that's what it looked to be. Mm-hmm. But with that, we will go to the world of ESPN, where they renewed their Major League Baseball deal through 2028. So another major live programming deal being done there. And this is mostly for the rights for Sunday Night Baseball.
Yes. So this is
famous.
This is from an article from the premier sports business journalist, John O'Rand. Sports Journal. This is a decrease, though, from the previous deal, but it's for less content. I feel like I just talked about this like 4 months ago. Are you more up on this than I am? Didn't Major League Baseball just make a deal with somebody that was a slight downgrade? But actually, when you average it out by game, it was actually an increase. Any idea what I'm talking about there? Okay.
Not the top of my head. So Major League Baseball, a lot of it is regional network still. So, for example, I'm a Philadelphia Phillies fan, so I buy the MLB package. And they're broadcasting on NBC Philadelphia, mm-hmm. like, or NBC Sports Philadelphia, right. Wherever like that's, and it's all
the RSNs,
like through, yes, the regional stuff.
Yeah.
During the week, ESPN had baseball games, and I believe TBS has playoffs, but I don't know if they, yeah, playoffs. I don't know if they have regular, it's, I live in my own bubble of baseball. Like I said, I buy the package, and I mean, there's your SNYs or your YESs, which are specific networks for that team. So it's not your typical overall sports package.
So let's just, this would be one of those points if I was doing this alone where I would pause the podcast recording for 45 minutes and figure out what the hell I was talking about. And that's why it would take me 5 hours to record. But anyway, so let's just read a couple of excerpts from this article from Sports Business Journal. The seven-year deal, this is, again, ESPN's renewed deal with Major League Baseball, not the Major League Baseball. It's like saying the WWE. Anyway.
But hey, the Peacock.
That's okay. I'm okay with that. Anyway, through 2028, ESPN is getting exclusive rights to Sunday Night Baseball. The seven-year deal is worth $550 million per year sources said. And that's down $700 million on an average annual basis. So ESPN will get less content with this deal, so its rights fee dropped, though its cost per game increased. And when I read this, I thought, am I just reading the article from like 6 months ago? No, this is May 13th. But the article mentions that there was Major League Baseball got a 40% increase in its deal from Fox, a 65% increase from Turner. So these, at least for these top sports leagues, rights still growing.
Yeah, I did forget about the Fox weekend games too. Yeah, and where Fox and Turner really gets involved in the playoffs, but yeah, Sunday Night Baseball is usually the premier game of the week. So that's why the cost would be, it's usually like two division rivals or two really good teams would, when they make the schedule, they do that on purpose. So,
And we can talk briefly about the Tony Khan talk on Variety that I made you listen to. I listened to it live, but what did you take away from it?
So it was a lot of analysis as far as sports and the audience and all that. And he talked a lot about, now the name escapes me, the sports analytics firm he's part of. It's like True Something or whatever. Yes. I can't think.
True Media, is it?
True Media, yeah. Talked a lot about that based on the analytics, and they kind of, there was a lot of wrestling segues as far as talking about, you could see a certain guy's doing well in a certain segment, and you want to use that analytics to make the guy maybe possibly better. Like they mentioned, the host had mentioned how WWE was supposedly doing great numbers whenever Rusev was on TV, and they didn't take advantage of it.
Is Gavin Bridge, who's written a number of articles for Variety that are really the wrestling, and I gave him a little bit of research one time for one of his articles. There was, I think what you're referring to is there was a so you could enter questions in a chat as you were watching this live.
Yeah.
And someone in the chat was probably not well acquainted with wrestling, said, why do stats matter in wrestling? Basically, it's all fake. Why does it matter? And Tony Khan was he was not even prompted by Gavin about this. He just said, okay, for that one, no, if it definitely matters, because if people aren't reacting well to something, then I want to know that and adjust accordingly. Basically, paraphrasing what he said there. Basically, that he follows the minute by minute ratings very closely.
But yeah, I mean, other than that, your typical, sports analytics, and they talked about Fulham. Not much. I don't remember not much about the Jaguars, I don't think. But it talked a little bit about Fulham, and Fulham just got deregulated. So
that is the soccer team.
A lot of talks about that.
That is the soccer team that Tony Khan is the general manager of, correct?
Yes.
Maybe
I believe
maybe if. If there is a Patreon podcast to do about this this interview, maybe with a few excerpts, because this was again, I want to go through it in more detail, but I felt like this was the most that we really got to hear in my experience ever. Tony Khan talk about the media industry generally and how consumers are consuming media, what matters, what are you doing this with all these YouTube shows, and what's the thought behind that, and what do you think about how sports viewership is behaving overall. This is somebody obviously who's involved not just in wrestling, but in the NFL and in football of the world kind, not just the American kind. So maybe that's something that we'll look into more. Or if not, I'll just edit this comment out.
but yeah. So anything else that's on your mind this week, Brandon?
New Jack passed away.
Yeah.
I heard you had to re-record your podcast because you were what, burying him at the beginning?
No, not burying at all. But we re-edited out. It was just we were talking about him in present tense, and hey, New Jack's a fan of the show, and
yeah,
because we do ours once a month. We record it early, and he posted on Facebook where he heart emojied. We talked about he heart emojied our episode and us and that. And mm-hmm. Now it doesn't seem. It seems like it doesn't seem right to not that we said anything wrong, but it just, it'd be talking like he didn't pass.
Yeah.
No.
Right.
But yeah, that was, you know, with New Jack, it's a lot of people in New Jack stories, and I honestly can't think if I've ever had one. I was never on a show with him because the rumor was, Brandon, you know, in New York that he wasn't allowed to come in.
That sounds
because he had warrants out. There was actually a certain promoter, and he's publicly talked about this on Facebook, so I can say this. Our good friend Johnny Moose from Excite wanted to bring him in and then just hop him in a car and get him across to the Pennsylvania border before anyone would know.
After doing so. Binghamton, which is where Johnny Moose promotes, Binghamton's not that far away from the Pennsylvania state line, so you could probably pull that off if you don't advertise him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes,
not far at all.
That New Jack would definitely be a Johnny Moose style wrestler to bring in, wouldn't he? Yes.
But yeah, and then I think I remember meeting him as a kid at the Broadway Market in Buffalo for an ECW pay per view. Yes.
Oh wow!
You don't remember this?
No. He was at the Broadway Market.
They did an before the ECW pay per view that was in Buffalo.
Okay, which was Anarchy Rules or November to Remember?
I think so.
Okay.
I think it was the Anarchy Rules.
You went to ECW shows at the Burt Flickinger Center. I never did.
I went to one. Okay. Yes.
This one, the pay per view.
Yeah. Okay. But. They were signing autographs at the Broadway Market, and my mom worked at the Broadway Market for one of the stands where the lady kind of had she had a little bit of power.
For people who are not from Buffalo, quickly summarize, what is the Broadway Market?
It is a giant indoors, because I know a lot of cities is outdoors, a giant indoors market of different, like, foods from different, like, you know, parts of the world.
This is not somewhere where I would imagine you'd have a meet and greet for wrestling.
No, not at all. But being a young kid, it was great. Some kid called wrestling fake, and Spike Dudley showed him all his marks. He goes, "This look fake." And like I said, my mom worked for a lady that was pretty prevalent in the Broadway Market, and I was like, "Oh, I didn't," because I waited in line. I missed the cutoff to meet Francine. I was really upset about that. And the lady goes, "Hold on one second." And she brought me back. Like to meet Francine after Francine's autograph session was over with, which is pretty awesome. And my mom made sandwiches for little Guido. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Were you offered drugs at any point in that?
I was not. It was a great Saturday morning at the market.
How old were you? Wait, this is 99, 2000, right?
Yeah, I was 10, 9 or 10.
Nice. Okay. Do you have a new Revisiting the Indies podcast?
We're going to be releasing our XPW Part 3, which I talked about last week. It's the Philly area drama. XPW was pretty much CZW and Ring of Honor stopped hating each other to together hate XPW. that's how bad this got. Just to give you a little tip of Brandon, you'll enjoy this. So XPW needed to have a Philadelphia residence. Or a Pennsylvania residence to get a Pennsylvania license, right? Mm-hmm. And they didn't have anybody that lived in Pennsylvania, so they just used Rob Feinstein's RF video address. So then the athletic commission calls Feinstein up and is like, "Hey, is this?" He goes, "No."
Ring of Honor exists at this point, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Ring of Honor exists at this
point. And he's not out at that point. He's still involved with
Ring of Honor. No, he's still involved. Okay. Yeah, very involved.
Yeah.
So that was there's lots of fun tidbits like that in the Rediscovering Indies that'll be coming out this week.
Yeah. What do I have to plug? On the Patreon, there's a spreadsheet again with the numbers that we actually did mention in this episode, but they are included in this one page PDF report that I'm quite possibly going to put out weekly, the WrestleLog Viewership Report, which uses data from the spreadsheet, both of which you get access to. If you're a subscriber for just $5 a month, patreon.com/WrestleOmics. That's it. You have anything else to plug?
No, just at social media, Chris Gola for all of them, and for Rediscovering Indies, RTI Pod on Twitter, and it's Rediscovering Indies on Facebook and Instagram. And yeah, no, just another great week of WrestleOmics Radio, I guess.
Okay. If you want to check out resources, stats, things, numbers on the wrestling business, you can check out the resources section of WrestleOmics.com. You can follow WrestleNomics on Twitter and Instagram, even at WrestleNomics. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon Thurston. I'm Brandon Thurston. He's Chris Gullo, and we will talk to you next time.